delighted to have the Honourable Catherine King come and join us to give the opening address. Catherine, as you all know, is the Shadow Minister for Health, but has held ministerial portfolios in the last government and was the previous Parliamentary Secretary for Health and Ageing. So is well across this portfolio, has a background in community development. In fact, Catherine and I met and studying community development a fair while ago, I won't say how long, but so we're delighted to have you here, Catherine, to provide an opening for this two-day event.
Thanks very much for that introduction, Tony, and thank you very much for not disclosing exactly when that was. We've all had long, long careers in this sector. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we gather, and I pay my respects to their elders, both past and present. There are many people in the room who I want to acknowledge, but the first thing I want to do is particularly to say thank you to APRA for putting this forum on over the course of the next 2 days. I think we're at a very critical juncture when it comes to healthcare reform, and I think it's very important that gatherings such as this continue to push the dialogue when it comes to healthcare reform. And I do want to acknowledge the many speakers that you'll have over the course of the next couple of days. I particularly acknowledge the South Australian Minister for Health, Honourable Jack Snelling, as well as many of the other distinguished speakers that you will have with you. Can I, as I said, commend APRA on the progressing the dialogue on health reform and continuing to challenge healthcare providers, researchers, consumers and politicians on how we can work together to improve health outcomes through health system reform. Paul Keating said, and John Howard agreed, when you change the government, you change the country. I'm just not at all convinced, however, that the changes being pursued by the Abbott government in healthcare are ones that voters or the healthcare sector bargained for, nor in fact the sort of radical surgery that Medicare either requires or in fact will survive. Labor in government, as you know, embarked on a lengthy process to first consider health and hospital reform and then to negotiate what was possible with states and territories and through the cabinet processes and through the parliament. The result was largely, despite a couple of politically opportunistic breakouts from Victoria and Queensland in the lead up to the last federal election, it has largely seen an end to the long-standing, fractious relationship between the Commonwealth and the states when it comes to healthcare financing. But more importantly, it provided a substantial platform for states and territories in the Commonwealth to agree on a series of policy reforms to public hospital improvement, better integration of primary care, workforce planning, population health planning, and prevention. I don't need to tell this audience that all of that work has essentially been trashed. What survives of it is yet to be seen. I see that the CEO of IPA is speaking with you as well today, and I very much hope that there is continued and renewed commitment by all parties to their work. My fear is that without the incentives of the National Partnership Agreement, that this will not be the case, but it will be very important for the ongoing healthcare reform, particularly in the hospital sector, but not only, that that work continue. There is, of course, much that is wrong with the Abbott government's first round of cuts when it comes to healthcare, and make no mistake, this is in fact only the first round. Whether it is being them based on false information, Joe Hockey's continued repetition of inaccurate average GP visits as a case in point, deliberate distortion, the arguments about the sustainability of health expenditure fail to focus on health outcomes, or on those areas of the budget such as PBS reform, where substantial savings have been made, largely without transferring costs onto patients. Whether it be tackling the wrong end of the health system with policies such as the GP tax and slashing prevention and Indigenous health programs, or whether it be the way in which the government appears to be pursuing a broader role for private health insurers in primary care without any proper debate about the impact on the universal the principles of universal health care, that is Medicare. The first of the health budget bills reached the Parliament this week, with the $1.3 billion medicines hike and changes to the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme Safety Net being considered in the House of Representatives today. The bills to abolish Health Workforce Australia and the Australian National Preventative Health Agency are listed for consideration in the Senate. They've already been through the House this week. I don't know if they'll come up in the Senate. The mining resource rent taxes will take precedence, I imagine. In the coming weeks, we can expect bills to affect the government's GP tax, the bills to establish the Medical Research Future Fund, its changes to the MBS safety net, freezing the indexation of the MBS levy surcharge, private health insurance rebate, and freezing the indexation of a number of MBS items. A number of changes won't require legislation because they involve not honouring national partnership agreements, but they will have a significant and detrimental impact all the same. They're not limited to the more than $50 billion being cut from public hospitals, the $367 million the government will save by failing to honour the National Partnership Agreement on Prevention, the $229 million being cut from the Dental Flexible Grants Program, the $391 million from the NPA for Adult Public Dental Services, as well as $197 million being cut from the Health Flexible Fund, largely which goes to the not-for-profit sector in health, to deliver a range of services that are not delivered in other capacities. It would be easy for me to focus today on the cuts that are in the recent budget, but I do want to speak about the possibilities it presents, both in terms of future policy development and the importance of focusing the public's attention on the strengths of our healthcare system and why it matters. I also want to mention one of the potential changes that has not received as much attention in the context of the more prominent cuts and changes, but one I note that you do have on your program, and it's a change that I think will have a significant impact, and that is around the role of private health insurance. Many of you will be familiar with a trial underway in Queensland where, in essence, it's not exactly correct, but where, in essence, a private health insurer is able to guarantee a certain level of access to GPs for their clients. That's a trial that Labor has some reservations about, as it sees private health insurers move into a role they have previously been prohibited from engaging in. The Minister for Health has been quite open that he sees private health insurers having a greater role in primary care. To date, we're yet to see what this will mean other than a willingness to encourage this trial, but over the longer term, Labor is concerned about what the government will do to undermine the universal health care and to encourage privatisation in primary care. It's not to say we don't see a role for private health insurance in population health or some very good examples that are happening in aged care or happening with Medicare locals. And of course, we all have, as healthcare reformers, the long-held Kaiser Permanente system as being held up as one of the gold standards. So when you've got a captured population, there is some very, very good population health initiatives that you can enact. So it's not to say we don't see a role for private health insurance. I'm just not convinced that where the government's going at the moment, without a proper debate about what it means for Medicare, is the right way to go. It is, of course, in terms of privatisation, something we are already seeing when it comes to Medicare locals. The Prime Minister has certainly broken the promise that no Medicare locals will close. In fact, all 61 of them will close, and the department is now preparing a tender for the far fewer number of primary healthcare networks that will replace them. I visited more than a quarter of the Medicare locals over the past 9 months and am deeply concerned about the effect their abolition will have. I acknowledge Professor John Horvath's review into Medicare locals and the substantive finding that they are doing what Labor established them to do. That is, better integrate the fragmented health services across Australia and to improve health outcomes at a local level and to provide a focus on population health planning and on prevention. All Medicare locals have had some of their budgets absorbed to fund the new tender process for primary health networks, and for some Medicare locals, that has accounted for almost 20% of their entire budget. Labor does have significant reservations regarding the privatisation of primary health networks, and these PHNs simply are becoming purchasers of services, which is one of the roles Medicare locals have played, but it is not the sole role that Medicare locals have played. It's not what Medicare locals were primarily established to do, and if this work is to be halted, it will affect health outcomes in local communities. This year for Medicare locals was always about capacity development, but this is being lost because of the uncertainty the government's decision has created. particularly in regional areas, Medicare locals are struggling to retain qualified health workforce that they have brought to areas that up until that point have had no speech pathologists, psychologists or dietitians, because there is uncertainty about what positions will be available and what funding will be left once this tender is complete. More broadly, the government clearly sees the Commonwealth as having a much reduced role when it comes to the development of health policy and in future healthcare funding. After decades of Commonwealth and state squabbling over cost shifting, the health and hospitals reform process negotiated by Labor in government led to a new accord between the Commonwealth and states, one that saw the Commonwealth agree to fund 50% of efficient growth in hospital funding. This was a commitment that was shared by the new government up until May this year, is in their health policy documents. So far, the reduced role Tony Abbott sees for the Commonwealth has clearly been borne out through the GST debate the government has clearly set up with state governments, and it will be seen further as this government develops its Federation White Paper, one that will undoubtedly recommend a much smaller role for the Commonwealth in health. I would urge all of you to actively engage in the government's Federation White Paper process. It will be a very important one for the health sector. These changes are part, we believe, of a gradual shift towards a more privatised system and one that is of great concern to Labor. They are changes that will be very difficult for Labor to overturn the next time we're in government. And they will lead to a much less affordable and much less equitable health system, and I'm not convinced that they will lead at all to better health outcomes in this country. As I said earlier, the significant threat the health system is under is greatly concerning, but it does actually provide some opportunities. Far from perfect, this period of upheaval has refocused attention on the positive elements of the system. It's also re-engaged the sector together in a way I haven't seen for a long time. As many of you would be aware, Australia does get good health outcomes for the money that we spend. The United States government spends 8.3% of its GDP on health compared to 6.4% by the Australian government. And in terms of health spending overall, at 9.5%, Australia spends less than comparable OECD countries and much less than the United States, that spends 17.7% overall. And for that amount, Australia spends, our life expectancy is the 7th best in the OECD. These are good outcomes and only reinforce that the changes this government is proposing will be putting Australia in the wrong direction. That's why over the course of the next 2 years, as we head to the 2016 election, I want to be working with the Alliance members to develop new policies that will improve what, as it stands today, is a very good health system. But it will not be enough to simply try to repair the havoc and destruction inflicted by this new government in its first term. We need to do much more than that. One of the challenges I think we have in health reform, and one of the challenges I think Labor didn't address as well as we could have in government, is not so much a shortage of ideas. The ideas that you'll hear over the course of the next couple of days, the many reports that I'm getting in and briefings that I'm having from all of you, are absolutely a testimony to that. But the danger we have is in explaining them to people and ensuring that the community has ownership of them. The danger in health reform is that often it can be very much an insider's conversation, and much of the language of integrated care, activity-based funding, MBS item numbers, PBAC, NEST, NEET, funder purchaser provider, downstream funding activity is incomprehensible to anybody outside of this room. I think any reform process needs to start from how people, when they want to stay well, when they want advances to their healthcare, when they become sick, when they or their child or aged parent receives a diagnosis, it must be how they experience and they access the system that is our starting point. As the party of Medicare, Labor is committed to working with you to build on the good work we did achieve during 2 terms in government and to make sure not only that Medicare is sustainable into the future, but that it is the envy and continues to be the envy of OECD countries when it comes to healthcare. Thank you very much for having me here this morning. I'm very happy to be here at the opening of your 2 days of deliberations, and I am very happy to take questions, but I also want to wish you well in what is a very challenging period for the healthcare sector, but I think one that is rich with opportunities for ideas, rich for debate, rich for discussion, but also makes all of us actually have to think about what is it that we value, what is important, And how do we actually explain and debate and bring people along